Okay, let's continue the morning session. The next speaker is Jaroslav Trinka from the University of California, Davis, and the subject of his talk is amplitude headroom.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you very much, organizers, for inviting me to this wonderful conference. So I will continue the amplitudes morning, talking about scattering amplitudes, but from a little bit different perspective, also a different object. So this is the work with Mimar Kanehamet and Johannes Hahn, and also some more work in progress with the same people and Dima Čičerin, and also separate work with my students and postdoc at UC Davis. Okay, so the outline is that we will be interested in scattering amplitudes in planar n equals 4 super Young-Mills theory. So we know that this particular theory is a great playground for searching for new theoretical ideas, so we will use it as well. And we will use so-called amplitude hedron formulation for the loop integrand in the perturbation theory. And I will briefly review what it means, but it will be not that important for actually the core of the talk. But what we really want to do is with this reformulation, geometric reformulation of the perturbation theory, we would like to do some all-loop order resummation and also answer some questions about the strong coupling physics. Now, we will not work directly with amplitudes because they suffer from some problems such as IR divergencies, but we will define some IR finite quantity, which I label F, GZ. It will depend on coupling constant G, and Z, which will be one parameter. It will be a cross ratio of some kinematics, and it will be derived from the four-point amplitude. And we will find some new expansion, which will be exact in G and also in Z, which is natural from the geometric perspective, but so far doesn't have any physical interpretation. Yeah, we will call it loops of loops expansion, and we will be able to calculate some leading order in this expansion and compare to some results, actually also calculated from integrability at strong coupling. And we will make some connection to the cusp anomalous dimension as well. So our topic is, as I said, planar n equals 4 super Young-Mills amplitudes, so in planar, large, and limit of maximally supersymmetric Young-Mills theory in four dimensions. This theory in planar limit has a lot of symmetries. It has a conformal symmetry and also dual conformal symmetry, so another set of conformal symmetries which nicely close into the Jungian symmetry. So as a consequence of that, the amplitudes are very simple, or at least simpler than in general gauge theory. And and for us, it's a great toy model to study S-metrics in gauge theories. The amplitudes are UV finite. The perturbative expansion is exact in the planar limit. The non-perturbative pieces are absent. And the perturbative expansion has a finite radius of convergence. So if we are able to calculate the perturbative amplitudes to all orders, we are getting the exact amplitude in this theory, apart from the problem with IR divergencies, because, of course, if we would like to calculate the actual scattering amplitude, we would have to regulate it, and that would, unfortunately, break some symmetries. For example, in dimensional regularization, we would break both the conformal and dual conformal symmetry. So that's an open problem if there are some good regulators which would preserve symmetries or what we can do with that. But we will avoid that problem. Yeah, we will avoid that problem by actually dealing with some IR finite quantity. Now let me just quickly review through several different directions in the amplitudes research, and we will also use some of these results or some of these methods in our work. So the standard perturbative expansion, as the usual textbook thing, is the loop expansion. Normally, we are taught to draw all Feynman diagrams, evaluate the Feynman diagrams, sum them at a given order in perturbation theory. There is a more modern version how to do that called generalized unitarity, which is based on the method of first constructing the basis of integrals, so all possible integrals which can, at loop level, appear in the scattering amplitude with some unfixed coefficients, and then fix the coefficients using cuts. because on the cuts, the loop amplitudes factorize into tree-level objects. We can calculate them, and then we can fix the coefficient. So we expand the amplitude, any amplitude in any theory, in some basis. And then we have to calculate these integrals. And in general, of course, that's a very difficult problem. And yeah, there are many, many people and many different methods to do these calculations. Now, in the planar limit, we are in a better shape. At least we are more interested kind of in the theoretical aspects because we can define global variables. Basically, even in this expansion using basis integrals, in the planar limit, we are able to label the loop momenta in all integrals in the same way, yeah, to kind of line up the loop momenta in individual diagrams and sum everything together. So we can really talk about the loop integrand as a single rational function. You can think about it as a sum of Feynman diagrams prior to integration, but there is something unique about it. Yeah? In general theory, if you consider non-planar, you would label each diagram independently. The loop momenta in different diagrams would mean different things, and there is kind of no canonical way how to sum them together. But in the planar limit, thanks to the existence of the global variables, called also dual variables, we are able to define this integrand function. And the variables that we will use, I will kind of use both of them during the talk, are either these dual variables, which you can see from the picture. In the planar limit, the particles are ordered, so the momenta are ordered, so we can just form the closed polygon with the momenta, and at the vertices, you have the location of the dual variables. And the polygon is closed because there is a momentum conservation. And for the loop moment, so these are axes, these are for external momenta, and for the loop momenta, we typically use the y variables. These are also points in this dual space. And we can also use different variables, planar variables, which are useful for also different ways, which are called momentum twisters. I will not go into the details, but you can repackage the degrees of freedom. So instead of these points in the dual space, you talk about the points in the momentum twister space, which is just a projective space P3. Okay, and in this momentum twister space, the loop momentum is given by a line. The loop momentum is given by a line, which I denote as AB. It's an AB line. AB are two points on a line which are arbitrary. In any way, so we have this loop integrand. In planar n equals 4 super Young-Mills, it's a unique rational function that you can construct in different ways. It's a function which satisfies all cuts. It has this dual conformal symmetry, or even Jungian symmetry. And it can be also constructed in using different methods, including this generalized unitarity. But we have also recursion relations, which construct this loop integrand from tree-level amplitudes in the end. OK, so this is just a short comment that in these recursion relations and expanding the integrand, there is a natural basis of on-shell objects called on-shell diagrams. And there is some very nice relation to positive Grassmannian and some objects in algebraic geometry and combinatorics. And importantly, these different pieces kind of, in the end, glue together in this recursion into a single object called amplituhedron, which we will use here in this talk. And I will quickly review just the parts that are needed for our work. Now, I would like to also mention that apart from like this method of constructing the integrand, either as a sum of diagrams or using recursion, and then you have to integrate it. And that's one term in the perturbation theory. And you have to do order by order in perturbation theory. There are also different methods that people developed over the years. One particular directions are bootstrap methods, in a sense that you still work in a perturbation theory, but you completely skip this step of constructing the integrand, and you directly want to fix the final amplitude. Yeah. In order to do it, so you also construct a basis of objects that can happen, but now not integrands or diagrams, but functions. And there is actually kind of a redux of the function, of the information in the functions that can appear, which are complicated transcendental functions called symbol, which tells you about the branch cuts of these transcendental functions. So it's a code which has letters called symbol letters, and they provide the location of the branch cuts of the amplitude. So if you have enough control over the analytic structure of the amplitude, you can write an ansatz for this symbol, or consequently also for a function, and just fix that linear combination and get the amplitude directly without going through the integrand process. As I said, the amplitudes are IR divergent, so here what you really calculate in these methods is not the amplitude, but some IR, also some IR finite derivative of the amplitude called ratio function. It's a ratio of two amplitude or remainder function when you strip some universal IR divergence factor. And finally, we can also use the amplitudes Wilson loop duality, because amplitudes in planar n equals 4 superangles are dual to null polygonal Wilson loops. And we can, instead of calculating amplitude, we can also calculate Wilson loops. By the way, this duality also explains the existence of this dual conformal symmetry for amplitudes. It's a conformal symmetry of the Wilson loops. And using ADS-CFT correspondence, we can get access to the strong coupling information about scattering amplitudes, as discovered in a nice paper by Fernando and Juan Mandacena, when they calculated the leading strong coupling behavior of scattering amplitudes as a minimal surface problem in ADS. Then there is also an extremely powerful method which uses integrability as an input, the flux tube expansion at finite coupling, which uses some building blocks fixed by integrability. And at the amplitude level, it expands the amplitude around the collinear limit, but to it gives an exact expansion in the coupling constant. So this is a completely different alternative expansion, which is exact in the coupling, so it's not a perturbative expansion, but expands around some special kinematical point. And yeah, this expansion converges faster than the perturbation theory, so it's an also extremely powerful method how to calculate amplitudes. Okay, but now to the topic of our talk. As I said, we would like to deal with some IR finite objects. We will do it in the perturbation theory, but then eventually we will be able to do resummation. So we will also have some expression which will be exact in the coupling constant. But in order to define that object, we have to talk a little bit about IR divergences in the planar n equals 4 superangular amplitudes. So first, the dual conformal symmetry is extremely restrictive on the structure of scattering amplitudes. And for 4-point and 5-point, the structure of the amplitude is basically fixed to all loops up to a constant factor. There are no non-trivial kinematical functions that we can write. The dual conformal symmetry says that for 4 and 5-point, there are no cross ratios that we can write. So everything, the structure of the amplitude can be fixed through the BDS ansatz. So if we resum the amplitude to the all loops, we get the exponent of the one loop amplitude multiplied by some function of the regulator. So let's say we are doing it in the dimensional regularization. So up to some coefficients in the epsilon expansion, which are some numbers, everything is basically fixed. The kinematical part is fixed just from the one loop amplitude. At higher points, at 6-point and higher, we can get some non-trivial finite functions of cross ratios, which are not fixed by the dual conformal symmetry. So these are called remainder functions, and we have to calculate them separately. Okay. So this object here in the exponent of the amplitude has a 1 over epsilon square divergence in the dimensional regularizations coming from just one loop amplitude. And if we take the logarithm of both sides of this equation, we can define an object logarithm of the amplitude. And this will indeed have only 1 over epsilon square leading divergence. So it will be a very mildly divergent object. And the logarithm of the amplitude will be exactly kind of our starting point, what we would like to talk about. Obviously, it has the same information as the amplitude. But the amplitude diverges like 1 over epsilon to the 2L for L loops. It's very massively divergent, but all this divergence just comes from the exponentiation. So the real invariant part is just this 1 log over epsilon squared. So we kind of dig down and dig into the real divergent piece, which is a non-trivial information. Now here, G on all these formulas is just the usual Toft coupling given by that. Okay, so now let's look at the logarithm. We can just take the logarithm of M and expand in coupling, and we can talk about the one-loop logarithm, two-loop logarithm, three-loop logarithm, and so on. And these are just combinations of amplitudes and products of lower loop amplitudes. But these are very special combinations. If you, for example, look at the three-loop result, this is a combination of three-loop amplitude, two-loop, one-loop, and one-loop cube. Each of the term is 1 over epsilon to the 6th divergent. However, this combination is just 1 over epsilon squared. This, again, just underscores the point that all these higher divergences are trivial, and only this 1 over epsilon squared is really the non-trivial beef in the IR divergence. Now, because these amplitudes are all planar, and I already said that for planar amplitudes, we can talk about the integrand as a rational function, we can also talk about the integrand for the logarithm. We just combine these things together, and we get one rational function, and that will be integrand for the L-loop logarithm. Now, this integrand is not planar anymore, because we combined planar things and products of planar things, so it's not planar, but it's some well-defined integrand. And the fact that it only diverges very mildly is hidden in the cut structure. Yeah? So it is actually the mild IR divergence is a consequence of certain vanishing cuts in the integrand, which are normally responsible for stronger IR divergences. OK, so we have the integrand for the logarithm. And now we start to integrate. And it's exactly the consequence of these cuts of the integrand for the logarithm of the amplitude that in order to generate IR divergence, we have to integrate all loops out. So if we integrate one by one, at each step we get an IR finite object until the last step, when we integrate the last possible loop, we generate the IR divergence. Okay? So if we want to define something finite, we can integrate all the way and stop just one step before the end. Yes, you can prove that, yeah. And so this is closest we can get from the integrand to the amplitude without dealing with the IR issue and with the regularization issue. Yeah. So this is the object we will study. It will depend on one loop momenta starting from arbitrary L. We integrate L minus one loop momenta out and just get a function of a single loop momenta. And because of the dual conformal symmetry, this object, we didn't have to introduce any regulator, so we didn't break the symmetries, so it's still dual conformal invariant. And that dictates that it only depends on a single cross ratio Z, which in the momentum twister space, you can write it like that, but you can also write it in the dual space using momenta and so on. Okay, so this was at L loops. It's not a rational function anymore. It's a very complicated transcendental function, but it's finite and depends on a single cross ratio. Okay, so now once we have this function, we can just dress it with the coupling constant and sum to all loops. Just like formally define this non-perturbative IR finite object, which depends on G and Z. Okay, yeah, I'm not telling you how to calculate it at the moment, yeah, but I'm defining this object and yeah, it satisfies, it's finite and only depends on a single cross ratio. We could also, of course, stop earlier and we could consider other object, but it would depend on more kinematical variables. Our goal was also to get only a single kinematical variable.
Do you know if at the strong coupling that last integral corresponds to integrating on the radial direction?
That I don't know. That's a good question.
That's what I would expect.
Okay, well, I will just on the next slide, this is an exact Wilson loop analog. Yeah, it's the same object which was considered in Wilson loop. Maybe I just showed a slide. So maybe it can be understood in this language, this because this last point is the Lagrangian insertion of the Wilson loop, and that brings the dependence on this last point. So let me just say that, and maybe we can then talk. The same object appeared much earlier in the literature, so this was nothing new. We just got the same objects from the amplitudes perspective of playing with this logarithm and integrating out things. But this object appeared much earlier as a ratio of Wilson loops, one with the Lagrangian insertions divided by the one without it. So, and exactly because in this combination, the IR divergence, the UV divergences here also cancel. So this is a finite object, and it's the same up to some kind of trivial rescaling of the G. This is unimportant. Here it's written in the dual space. And because of all the machinery, both at weak coupling and strong coupling for the Wilson loops, this object has been calculated to few orders at low coupling and a leading order at a strong coupling, using the same ADS-CFT methods. By formal, I just mean that a priori, we don't know how to calculate it. Yeah, we define it, and then we have to find some way how to calculate it. Yeah, no, it's not formal in a sense that there is some problem. Yeah, it's just that I'm not giving you the formula for that. I'm just defining it. Yes, it has, indeed, absolutely. So now, as an expansion at weak coupling, it's an expansion in G square, which G square is my Toft coupling. And at a strong coupling, it's an expansion in 1 over G. Now, as far as I know, at strong coupling, only the leading term was calculated. But maybe there is also some work on the subleading terms, but I'm not aware. At low coupling, there are several orders, because at low coupling, it's just perturbation theory. So you just have to calculate loops. And that was calculated up to certain order, I think 3 or 4 loops. But importantly, this is the expansion in G square and 1 over G. Now, as I said, after we integrate this FGZ over the last loop, we would recover the logarithm of the amplitude, and we would get this IR divergence. And we know that the leading IR divergence is controlled by the cusp anomalous dimension. Yeah? So if I write the logarithm of the amplitude, the leading divergence is 1 over epsilon square, and it's controlled by the cusp anomalous dimension when this is loop by loop, but of course I can define it as a function of coupling. So now there is a way, obviously, the cusp anomalous dimension is already hidden in the F somehow, because after we integrate F over L, we would recover log, and that has a gamma cusp as the leading 1 over epsilon square piece. And and there are several formulas. We found some new formula in our recent paper, but there are other formulas from before how to recover the cusp anomalous dimension from F, from the function F. And you can just do it. Yeah. So once you know F, you can calculate gamma cusp from that. Now, our goal is to focus on this function F and calculate it for all loops for generic kinematics. Okay, so this is basically calculated amplitudes to all loops. Well, this is too hard at the moment, yeah, so we don't know how to quite do it. We will do something else. We will use some amplitudehedron picture for loop integrand, which suggests a new type of expansion, not in small g or large g, not in z around some special point, but some other expansion. As I said, which is no physical analog at the moment. But this expansion will be exact in G and Z. And at the leading order in this expansion, we will go to the strong coupling, which is something we always wanted to do, was completely inaccessible for us. Now, I just want to say that in the simplest case that we will do, this will be very similar to the ladder resummation, which was done a long time ago, by just summing ladder integrals. The result we will get will be similar, despite the physics is kind of different. And if you just do this, summing ladder integrals, this was done explicitly, and then if you go to strong coupling, instead of growing like G at strong coupling, you get exponential suppression. So somehow the ladders are not good approximation for a strong coupling physics. Yeah. Okay. So. Let me go quickly through the geometric part, and then I will just focus on the results. So we will use the amplitudehedron picture, which tells you that amplitudes, tree-level amplitudes, and loop integrands in planar n equals 4 super Young Mills have some completely different geometric formulation as a differential form on some geometric space called amplitudehedron. And in the end, what it boils down is to having a geometry defined by some set of inequalities. They define some region, and you calculate the differential form with some special properties on that region, and that recovers a loop integrand. Okay, that would need, this is just a quick summary of that. And we will use this formulation. And in the amplitude hedron picture, maybe I'll go back, talk about a collection of L lines at L loops. So for each loop momentum, there is a line. The line is parameterized by four positive variables. You can think about it as 4 degrees of freedom in the loop momentum. And there are some quadratic conditions on these four positive variables. So for each F pair of line, you get a quadratic condition for its parameters. Yeah. So you, in the end, if you want to solve this geometric problem, saying what this region is and what is the form, you have to solve a bunch of quadratic inequalities. In general, like L square inequalities, and if L goes to infinity, this is a large system of quadratic inequalities. This is a very complicated problem. Okay, but it's a mathematical problem that once you solve, you are able to solve the physics problem of the loop integrand in planar n equals 4 superangles. Now, I will introduce some graphic notation. So to define the geometry at L loops, for each loop line that I want to impose the conditions on, I use a vertex, I use a point, and for each condition between two of these loop lines, I use a dashed blue line. So the L-loop integrand is a differential form on a geometry which is specified by this graph. Yeah? This tells that L is 5, you have 5 loops, and the geometry I would like to build says that for each pair of loops, I have some condition, I have some quadratic condition. We can have also a simpler geometry like this one when I don't impose all conditions, which is perfectly fine geometry, but it doesn't correspond to an amplitude or to an integrand of the amplitude. Now, the next step is to replace the positive links by negative links. So in the amplitude hedron definition between each pair, I have a positive link which imposes positive condition. But I can also impose negative condition, just flip the sign of the inequality. And this is a complement to saying that there was no condition at all on that thing. Okay, anyway, so this is just a graphic statement. Using this relation, I can flip all the dashed lines, which are positive inequalities, into the negative inequalities. And I get a sum over all graphs, not just this completely connected graph, but over all graphs with negative links. And then I can write a formal sum over all loops. Again, I dress it with a coupling constant. I sum to all L. And I use some facts between graphs that the sum over all graphs is also equal to the exponent of sum over only connected graphs. Okay? This is a true independent of what these graphs mean. But for us, it means that there is some differential form on some geometry. Okay, I can take the logarithm of both sides and expand in G. So in the end, what we get is an expansion of the logarithm of the amplitude in terms of some new building blocks, which are some D-log forms on some geometries. Okay, so I just expanded the amplitude in a perturbation theory, the logarithm of the amplitude, in a completely new way. And now I would like to get this expansion for the function f rather than the logarithm. So I freeze one of the loops, I denote it like that, and I integrate over all other loops. Okay, so this was a long way to say that in the end, I get a new expansion for f, which expands it as a new type of objects. These objects are IR finite. They originate from these positive geometries, from amplitude hedron and so on. But in practice, they are just some IR finite functions. And there is some geometry. I integrate over all the loops except the last one, and the we get an IR finite function of a single cross ratio. I'm just saying these objects have no physical interpretation. They are not diagrams. They are not terms in recursion. They are not Wilson loops, anything. Yeah. So that's the thing. They are kind of purely mathematical objects suggested by this amplitude-hedron picture. But let me calculate them. At tree level, the object is trivial. We just get one. There is no integration to be done. At one loop, we have only one object to consider, and it gives this simple thing, and that object directly reconstructs the weak coupling leading order contribution to this F. At two loops, when you integrate over two loops, these black dots are loops you want to integrate over, you can see that we get three contributions. Two of them are very simple. They are just some products of log squares with some pi's. And the last one is a little bit more complicated. There's some Li3, Li4. It's not that bad, but it's a little bit more complicated function. But you can already see some hierarchy here. These two are simple. And the graphs that denote it, label that geometry, are tree graphs. Yeah? But the last one is a loop graph. Loop not in a sense of the perturbation theory, because these objects are all two loops, but in a sense of like how complicated this geometry is. Yeah, it has kind of an internal loop. Yeah, there is some precise meaning why this is more complicated, but just from the visual point of view, it's more complicated graph, and it also has also more complicated expression. Okay, so we saw that there are these different graphs contributing. So let's do our first kind of run through the thing, and let's say I forgot all graphs except the simplest one I can consider, which are ladder-like graphs. Which are graphs which look like that. I dress them with the appropriate power of the G square, and I sum to all loops. And this is my approximation to the function F. But now, basically throwing out most of the contributions, but keeping just somewhat the simplest one, and let's see if it well approximates the function or not. So now, the property of the integrand, the explicit formulas for integrands coming from this geometry, allows us to write some differential equation. There is some Laplace operator acting on a graph. So there is some differential equation. It's a Liouville type differential equation that we can derive, and we can solve it exactly. So we can actually solve for any values of g and z this our geometric approximation of just taking the ladder graphs. Now, at weak coupling, so this is a precise formula that I wrote satisfying some boundary conditions. At weak coupling, it's obvious that we are taking only a very small subset of graphs, because you should draw all connected graphs, but we are taking only all ladder graphs, which is a very small. It's one graph per at each order in perturbation theory. So from this point of view, it's like a ladder approximation for the amplitudes. And actually, interestingly, at strong coupling, we get exactly the same expansion. We get exactly the same behavior. This thing is exponentially suppressed at strong coupling, unlike the exact results, which grows like G. Yeah. So obviously, this approximation gives a wrong. This is a wrong approximation at strong coupling. Yeah. Okay, but we can do a little more. We can consider all three graphs. Yeah? So the ones which don't have these internal loops, which had these more complicated formulas. And as it turns out, we can still use a similar differential equation. So we again get some Liouville type differential equation. We have to define some generating function, so there is a little bit more work. And we get an explicit solution. So this is a solution for the tree-level approximation in our loop of the loop space of this function f, where the A coefficient solves this equation. So we cannot write like an analytic expression, but it is a closed formula. Now, if we expand it at strong coupling, we get this behavior. So it doesn't grow like G. It misses the leading G contribution. It grows like constant, or it behaves like constant, but it has a 1 over G expansion. So it is much, much better than this ladder approximation. We are still missing the leading behavior, which is not surprising because we are truncating the expansion dramatically, only taking these tree-level terms and forgetting all the loop terms in this new meaning of the loop. But now looking at gamma cusp, which is hidden in this F, We find a surprising thing. This is a precise formula for gamma cusp from deintegrability. We know the formula for all weak coupling, strong coupling, anything. So we just expand that strong coupling from the formula by Zetterden and Staudacher. And now we also extract the gamma cusp from our tree-level approximation. We are, of course, not getting the agreement, but we are getting the right qualitative behavior at strong coupling. It also grows like G, which is surprising because, again, we took only a very small subset of graphs that we could, and we resum them, and we get qualitatively the right behavior. The coefficient is, of course, different. Yeah, we are not getting the right coefficient, but qualitatively the correct behavior. Now, just a side note, if we now go back to these ladders and we calculate gamma cusp from the formula that we obtained, we get a function which is exactly up to some just rescaling equal to the gamma octagon function studied in a completely different context by different people. We don't know why this is true. Maybe this gamma octagon function is just like a generic mathematical solution to some problem, but we got the same function. It seems like completely unrelated problems. Okay, so this geometric approach suggests following, that we can actually add one more parameter to the problem. We can, instead of fgz function, we should reform it by some new parameter xc it's an expansion of these loops of loops in our geometric space. Yeah, so all the tree graphs have just g to the, or this xc to the zero. All the one loop graphs have xc in the first power, two loop graphs xc square, and so on. The physical case is that we take xc as one. All graphs are treated equally. We just should sum over all of them. The thing that we did was an expansion around xc is zero, because for us, the loop graphs are too hard. We don't know how to calculate them at the moment. The tree graphs are simple. We could calculate them. We could resum them to all loops, the real loops in the loop space. So it looks like we are doing this type of expansion. So now the comparison is that the physical case, the thing which has the amplitude in it, or after the integration, we would get this logarithm. Again, we would have to deal with these IR divergences, is for generic G, Z, and Xc equals 1. The perturbation theory is for generic Z and Xc is 1, but expands in the coupling. The OP expansion, if it was formulated for this object, which I'm sure it can be, or maybe even was formulated, would be for generic coupling, and again, this extra coefficient is kept at the physical value 1. But we are doing different thing. We have generic G and Z, but we are taking a small expansion around Xc is 0. But really the physical case is 1. So the question is how well we do when expanding around 0 to get reproduce the behavior at 1. Okay, I'm at the end. So this was our first attempt to use these geometric methods for planar n equals 4 super Youngmans integrands for resummation and strong coupling. We define this object derived from the logarithm by freezing one loop and not getting the IR divergence, keeping everything finite. We have this new expansion in terms of negative geometries, and there was some new organization using loops of loops, where these were different loops, not the loops in the perturbation theory, but somehow they told us how complicated these geometries are. And we calculated it at the leading order for the three geometries and compared with the exact result. And for gamma cusp, we got surprisingly good behavior. Now, the main question is, how can we actually restore this strong coupling behavior in our expansion? Do we have to just consider next order, or is it something which emerges once we do everything at once, once we calculate the exact thing? There are questions about higher loops. We have also some deformed version of these geometries. Hopefully, there is some relation to integrability in them. And Also, because now we are able to resum everything to strong coupling, however, our picture is still very weak coupling. We are defining this integrand order by order in perturbation theory, and then we resum these integrated result up to the last integration. But actually, the most interesting thing would be to define the geometry directly at the strong coupling, which we, of course, don't know how to do. OK, thank you very much.
Any questions? In the meantime, let me ask, why is the negative geometry more useful than the positive geometry?
Well, it's just that, the positive geometry plays nicely with planarity. So once you construct positive geometry, it's manifestly planar. In a sense, you can expand it as a sum of planar integrals. The negative geometry plays nicely with IR divergence. So once it's a negative geometry, it is at most 1 over epsilon squared divergent. So by freezing one of these loops, as I did, you get something finite. So it's not planar because it's a combination of, it's a product of amplitudes and combination of them, which is not a planar object. You cannot expand it as planar diagrams. You can expand it as a product of planar diagrams. But it plays nicely with IR. And also, as we saw in the beginning, in order to construct from the amplitude something which has nice IR behavior, in a sense, it has very mild divergence, you can have to take these combinations of amplitudes. So, yeah, so it is closely related to that. Yeah, so therefore, the negative geometry, knows about IR, or wants to naturally construct a set of objects which have very mild or no divergence.
Is it actually obvious that so you're doing always L minus one loop integrations and then you leave one out? Is it obvious that it doesn't depend the result on which ones you leave out?
Like in which
I
order?
I mean, roughly speaking, whether Fubini for these divergent integrals is actually correct.
Well, there are so the integrand is symmetrized in all loops. So therefore, it doesn't matter in which order. Now, also to your question, if it is obvious that it is actually finite, it is, it's a little detailed argument, but if you look at cuts, we know that, first thing, we know where the IR divergences in loop integrands come from. They come from the collinear regions when the loop momentum is proportional to one of the external momenta. And you can show here that the logarithm of the amplitude, the only way how to make loop momenta proportional to external is to do it with all of them at the same time. Yeah, there is a particular cut which takes all loop momenta at once and make them proportional to the external momenta. If you freeze one of them, or one of them doesn't participate in this limit, you can never access the collinear region. Mm. Therefore, it's finite. Yeah. And The argument about finiteness comes from this. How can you access the collinear region in the loop integration space and without all momenta doing it at once, you cannot do it. So if you freeze one of them, you will never generate a divergence. Mm.
And I have another question. So as you know, the actual equation for the cusp is not an equation for the cusp, but for a more general quantity related to scaled spectral parameter. Did you try to find this actual equation as opposed to just the cusp?
Yeah, well, we were trying here with also Nima and Johannes that there is some natural deformation that you can do on the geometry and like add an extra parameter, which is very suggestive from the geometric point of view. We don't know if it has any physical meaning, but it seems like an extra parameter and it will again work closely with IR divergences. It actually wants to regulate these divergences. If you do this parameter once, you get something which is only 1 over epsilon divergent. If you deform it once, then for generic value, it's less divergent. If you deform it twice, it seems that it's even finite. So we are wondering if this deformation parameter is related to it. But we don't know.
Because the spectral parameter also doesn't have a physical interpretation in the gauge
right,
theory.
Right. So. Yeah. Okay. Possibly. Yeah.
Since I cannot see more questions, let's thank the speaker again for the. for the clear presentation. we move on to the next and last speaker of this morning's session.